Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of fthismovie.net, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and speaking once again of lovers and movies, I am joined by my movie, Erica Bromley.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm your movie.
Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun last time.
Right.
And the time before.
You went a long time without being on the show. Yeah. And now like twice in, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Something like that.
The Social Network podcast, you put it up on Wednesday, July 1st.
Look at you knowing the dates
totally.
Of things. And people responded well. Everyone's all, oh, I love hearing Erica's voice on the podcast.
Aww.
And I don't know if they mean like your voice
probably
in the larger
not.
Sense, like, you know, the voice of the author.
Right, yeah.
Or if they literally just mean like, oh, finally a girl.
They should feel okay no matter what. You know?
I agree with you 100%. And we're going to be talking about that later on when we talk about the movie 54, which is the theme of this week's episode. Now, listen, everyone. We know that you don't care about 54, okay?
I'm sorry.
We're not kidding ourselves here, okay? But here's the deal. Keep listening anyway, because I think it's going to be an interesting conversation just about the nature of director's cuts versus theatrical cuts, about the practices of Miramax, particularly in the 90s.
Mm.
I think we're going to touch on this idea of lost movies, movies that almost were and disappeared and rescued movies. This is very much a rescued movie. So if you don't care about 54... if you've never seen 54, you can absolutely still listen and I hope enjoy this show. We decided to talk about it because the director's cut, the long rumored, thought lost director's cut of 54 is finally now available, I think as of early June, on Amazon Instant Video and iTunes and probably wherever else you stream movies. I don't think it's available as a physical copy yet. The other night, my lovely wife, Erica, and I watched 54 twice in a row.
Yeah, we did.
Such is our commitment to F This Movie. We watched the theatrical cut, stopped it, immediately watched the director's cut. I would love to say that we are both now experts in 54, but I feel like, no, we're probably not, because both of us are trying to remember what happened in that movie and just remembering Boogie Nights. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. You should visit our website at fthismovie.net. If you're somebody who just listens to the podcast, you should know that we're publishing stuff on the site all the time. Maybe you like to read. Maybe you like to participate in the comments. Join us. There's a lot of cool stuff going on over there. I'll save the other stuff for the end.
And really nice people.
There are some nice people.
Yeah.
Some of the people, no, everybody's
nice. A lot of
nice.
Many nice people.
I'm very happy and in love with everyone. And the Dissolve now is gone. R.I.P. The Dissolve.
Yeah, that stinks. I was really shocked and sad about that.
Me too.
I especially love...
For a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
As somebody who wishes he could make a living as a film critic.
Right. Well, you're good enough to.
Thank you.
If people were paying anymore.
But clearly, yeah, there's just no market for that because those people were the best, I think among the very best in the business. And if they can't make a go of it, I don't know who can.
Do you remember that piece that they did
Superhero
on
Superhero Scoops, apparently. No. But you would remember it better than me because you're a wonderful person who loves Hoop Dreams more than anyone.
The Oral History of Hoop Dreams, I believe it was called.
Okay.
They did that for
a bunch of movies.
Yeah. Gosh, I loved it so much. And so that was just another reason why it made me so sad when I found out that they were shutting down.
Yes.
And do we know why? Just
Money.
Money, mostly,
I think it just wasn't financially viable for Pitchfork to keep it going. They were owned by Pitchfork.
Right.
The reason I bring that up is because a lot of people were lamenting not just the death of good film criticism, but also the community that had come, that kind of sprung up around
nice
the Dissolve. And I just want to say that we have a great community, thank you. And we're still around because none of us are getting paid. So it's, I guess, financially viable for us to continue.
It's a true passion project.
Oh, boy, is it. Anyway, so we're going to talk about 54 in
have
a little bit.
Have we ever done a podcast together where I have not brought up Hoop Dreams?
Probably not.
Okay.
I don't even think we've had a conversation where you've not brought up
every day.
Hoop Dreams.
Right.
It's cute, though. It's like your thing.
Aww.
It's your little thing that you
do. Thanks.
So we're going to talk about 54 in a little bit. Before we do that, Bew, my love, have you seen anything good lately?
Yeah, I have, which is better than my answer last time, right?
Is it hoop dreams? Is it cake?
Once a week. Oh, my gosh. Should we talk about cakes
more?
Listen,
a lot of love about cake when I was on the
listeners were really into it.
When I was on the True Bromance podcast. Hello once again to those guys.
Hi, you guys.
They were making jokes about how much we talked about cake on that podcast. So now it's, I've managed to talk about cake on two different podcasts.
Okay,
and now this is the third. So this is great.
We watched a documentary the other night called The Punk Singer.
Yes.
Which I didn't feel was the best documentary, but I was pretty interested in the story. So I enjoyed watching it, even though I wasn't thrilled by the filmmaking necessarily. If
yeah.
that makes sense. Yeah.
Adam Riske and I have been talking about that a lot lately because we're seeing a lot of documentaries about subjects that interest us that aren't very good documentaries.
Right.
But you still enjoy them because you're like, well, I like the thing it was about.
Right. Right.
So I can ignore the fact that this is not a great film.
And when the reverse happens, a documentary can be about something I have zero interest in. But if it's really well done, I'm glued to the screen the entire time.
Yeah, well, that's the mark of a really good film,
I
guess. Yeah, it's about Kathleen Hanna, the singer for Bikini Kill, the original Riot Girl with seven R's, which... This documentary actually shocked me because as far as I knew, according to our wedding vows, you were the original Riot Girl.
Right.
So I feel a little bit hoodwinked.
I wasn't trying to trick you.
A little bit bamboozled.
I'm a special kind.
I mean, it was an interesting thing to see sort of the progression of that movement.
Right. There was a lot more going on behind the scenes that I had no idea about.
Yeah. You get a lot of interviews with Adam Horowitz, which is always a great thing.
Yes.
Just listening to him talk. I feel terrible. Kathleen Hanna is important and contributed a lot to music, to feminism.
Mm-hmm.
She inspired, I think, a generation of girls. And that's all great. So I'm not trying to take anything away. The impression I struggled a little bit with the documentary at times because the impression that I got watching the movie, and again, this is just her edited in a 90-minute movie. I don't know her.
Right.
Is that she was somebody that I would have difficulty being in a room with. Now that's on me more than her because you know how I am with certain kinds of people.
Right.
I get uncomfortable and shut down.
Right.
And
it's
I would
your sweet, sweet social anxiety.
I would do that with her. And so I found it a little bit tough to take at times. Again, that's on me, not her.
Right. Right. I understand what you're saying. And the way it was edited surely could have contributed to that or the fact what's revealed at the end, I think.
Yes.
I don't want to give it. I mean, it's not like a...
She gets sick?
Yeah. So maybe that contributed a little bit to the way that it was all cut together.
Right. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Okay, so we saw The Punk Singer. That's on Netflix Instant if you are interested. We also saw what?
I saw Magic Mike.
You did.
XXL.
What?
Or was it just two X's?
XXL.
There should have been more X's.
Take it easy. Take it easy.
Oh, and speaking of penises, I also saw The Overnight.
Slow it down.
Okay.
Slow it down. Speaking of penises, we're going to be talking about 54 tonight.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of penises, my name is Patrick Bromley, and welcome to F This Movie. What's up? I'm a big dick.
Stop it with those jokes.
What? Joke. I am. You saw Magic Mike XXL. What
did
you think?
I liked it. Yeah,
right.
It was. I really loved what you wrote
Thank
about
you.
It, right?
You
did
know
you
you're biased.
I did. I'm super biased, but I'm trying to separate myself. No, I like what
you're
wrote.
Keeping it
They're
real.
Just all happy and trying to make others happy, and I like the. I like actually that the movie doesn't have. I mean, there's a conflict, but it's not. I feel like in other movies there are so many conflicts. And it's just. It's like that's what they think keeps viewers hanging on. Like, we're only interested if major, a big fight happens or this, whatever. But I don't know. This movie was conflict light, but I liked it a lot. I liked the performances.
It's fun, right?
It's
I'm pretty
fun,
sure it's
right?
inspired a couple of think pieces already. Like, if you think Magic Mike is feminist, you don't understand these 10 things about feminism. Here's this thing about think pieces.
Internet.
Fuck your think pieces. So... Do you have a favorite of the Magic Mike crew? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Oh, wow, you really are. Of course, Magic Mike, but C-tates. I don't know. No, I don't know if I want to say he's my favorite because then I feel like that's too obvious.
Well, listen.
I like them all. He's the lead for a reason. Let's talk about, the former wrestler. What's his name?
Kevin Nash.
Yes, Kevin Nash. Thank you.
Playing Tarzan.
He's sweet and fun.
Sure.
Joe
Manganiello.
Yep. He is Italian.
He is.
He's a tall Italian.
He is. Is he like one of those people you want to climb on?
Yeah. Like Triple H.
Yeah.
Remember?
I remember.
So if anyone's listening to this, I used to have this weird crush.
I'm hoping people are.
I used to have, at this point, I'm
this
not.
Is no longer a thing that we just do for ourselves.
Right. We're already doing this all the other times, all day long. I used to want to climb on Triple H. It was just like a friendly thing. Like I didn't want to like make out with him or anything. I just wanted
just a friendly climb.
I wanted him to like toss me around a little. Yeah.
Like a toss between friends. Right. Like you want to climb on him the way you climb on your friends.
Right.
No, I get it.
You're very tall and
like a platonic
friends.
Climb
yes.
and toss.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. That's. Oh,
flip me around,
yeah,
Triple H.
The way friends do.
Right. Does Triple H still flip people around?
You know, I don't know. He is not calling me back anymore. I think he's still in wrestling.
Okay.
But I don't know if he's.
So there's like a small chance that if I went to a show.
Oh,
I
he would definitely
hop in the
flip
ring
you around. Yes.
And ask him just to flip me around.
They welcome that
okay.
sort of thing.
Okay.
Yes,
do they?
Please.
Okay.
It's audience participation. Come on up.
Let's flip
you. Let's flip you around. Let's flip you around. Quick digression.
Okay.
And we'll try to make this fast because I know people sometimes get irritated. Some people love the section where we talk about the other stuff we saw and that's their favorite part.
Right.
Other people are like, just get to the movie that you're talking about.
Right.
So the thing about the internet is you can't make everyone happy ever.
I know. That's the thing about life.
So you just blew my mind. WrestleMania 3, which took place on my 10th birthday in Pontiac, Michigan. And I watched it as a pay-per-view with my two friends. That was how we celebrated my birthday.
You are so cute.
When I turned 10. It was Roddy Piper, who, as you know, is my favorite of the wrestlers. I still have a thing for Hot Rod.
Don't you have a t-shirt?
Of course.
Yes.
And a big cup.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So it was his last match. He was retiring. And everybody else like rode in these little mini wrestling rings down to the ring. He just walked because he's a badass.
Yeah.
And they play bagpipes. And he's like, I'm Hot Rod. I'm not riding in your dumb little ring. The point is this. He finishes. He wins. He gets to shave a guy's head. He gets an extra moment in the ring. And you see on the pay-per-view a guy who has somehow cleared security and is the world's biggest Hot Rod fan and realizes this is his last chance because he's retiring. Meanwhile, like a year later, he's out of retirement. I'm pretty sure he's still wrestling. And
sure.
It's about 30 years later almost.
Is he really wrestling or is it like that documentary we watched about the little hometown wrestling meets and some of them were former pros?
Oh, why am I not remembering this documentary?
Remember?
No.
Okay. We'll talk about it later.
Beyond the Mat?
No,
okay.
I don't think so.
Okay, no, because okay. That's... Anyway, this guy jumps out of the audience and, like, hugs him, and he seems genuinely startled for a second, but then turns around and kind of hugs the guy back. Camera cuts away to a super wide shot of the whole Pontiac Silverdome, and in the super wide shot, you see just a horde of security tackle this guy's ass to the ground. It's
they
knew to cut away before this guy got... brutalized.
Wow.
Anyway, what? Okay. Triple H,
wrestling,
climbing. Magic Mike, your favorite is?
Right. All of them.
Okay. Kind of a cheat
I
answer.
I love, let's talk about how their friendships are so sincere.
Yeah.
And
there's no competition.
Right. They support each other.
Yeah.
They can tease each other, but there's like a real sense of
the stripper bond. They are stripper brothers. How do you feel about Donald Glover's shirtless rapping? Like if you went to a lady strip club and Donald Glover shirtless rapped for you, would that
be
like,
this does it for
me? The lady strip
club part was actually the part that kind of threw me a little bit. Like,
I'm not even talking about Jada Pinkett's
weird
mansion
Well, so him rapping shirtless there is included. But are you asking me if I think
like
it's sexy?
Like,
I love Donald Glover.
Sure. But if you went out, like, not that you're not obviously not a big, like, strip club gal, but you're at a bachelorette party, that's part of it, right? You're just along for the ride.
Totally.
And you go to the strip club. And shirtless, it's not Donald Glover, so take away his celebrity. It's just this guy who looks like Donald Glover. He comes out and just raps without a shirt on. Are you like, I'm satisfied. This is good.
Take
my money.
If he was like
make
big
it rain.
If, if, If he was big and muscular, that wouldn't really make a difference to me either.
So it's more about the rap.
It's more
about the sick beats.
It's about the sick beats.
Got it. By the way, we both have to pay Taylor Swift for saying that.
Oh gosh.
She copyrighted that.
For real?
Oh yeah.
Then cut it out.
All right.
Okay. It's about the meaningful lyrics.
Oh sure. Yeah. All right. Good. So Magic Mike, you also saw The Overnight.
I did.
Which I saw a couple weeks ago at the Chicago Critics Film Festival
and had planned
to write a review for, but I saw about 20 movies that week and didn't get a chance to review them all, especially because Junesploitation started shortly thereafter and it all got lost in the shuffle.
Okay, give me your 1-minute review right now.
It's fine. I like the cast.
No one's ever heard you say that before.
No, I know. It's kind of a new, it's a thing I'm trying out.
Yeah, cast. Okay, yes.
I like them.
Yes.
I thought
parts of it were really funny in a way that was... like real life.
Yes.
And then other parts were so out there.
Yes.
So there was never this meeting in the middle.
That's the thing. It's like, and it's not, again, it's not on the movie. That's on me.
Right.
But it clearly wants to be a weird, outrageous comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the stuff that wasn't that so much that when it would go in that direction, I was like, no, I'd rather you be the more kind of realistic, honest look at being a certain kind of adult.
Right.
Trying to find friends and having kids.
2015.
Yeah.
You know, right. The punchline of the movie, can I call it that?
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely got a big laugh in the audience.
Yeah, it's a good moment.
That I was with. And it got me thinking that I could just, this probably didn't happen, but I could imagine people coming up with sort of that punchline and then going backwards almost from there. You know, like, okay, what leads up to this moment? But
well, it's a good trick. Because it gets you to forget about certain things.
Yes.
And then, well,
yeah. Yeah, right.
Just
go see it, people.
Yeah, there you go. I think it's gone from theaters.
Oh, no.
Now, well, we need more screens for Minions because that is not making enough money. We also saw Beyond the Lights.
Yeah.
Which is the movie, I think it came out last fall.
Directed by...
Gina Prince-Bythewood.
Yes.
Who made Love and Basketball.
I love Love and Basketball.
It's a movie we both like.
Mm-hmm.
And what'd you think?
I liked it.
All right.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. So it's about a pop singer played by, I hope I'm saying this right, Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Okay.
Who was in Larry Crown, but let's not hold that against her. She was the worst part of Larry Crown.
Oh,
let's not hold that against her. And Nate Parker as a cop. She's kind of like a Rihanna pop singer who is maybe going to kill herself one night. He saves her life, and then they fall in love, right? None of that is a spoiler.
Nate Parker.
Erica's a fan of the Nate Parker.
Nate Parker.
I was a fan of the Gugu at times.
Yeah.
I don't. That's a sentence. Gugu is the imaginary friend in Inside Out, right? Or is that, that's
no.
Bing Bong.
Bing Bong.
So she has purple streaks in her hair, and normally I'm irritated by that sort of thing, but she made it work. She was foxy.
You liked it, yeah.
I just felt like...
Yeah, they were good looking together.
Yeah, well, for sure. Uh-huh. No, they should make babies.
I know.
The first half of the movie, I was way on board. That was really interesting and like kind of a look at a certain kind of celebrity. And so I'm on board for all that. And then at a certain point, it's like... All right, we get it. Like, there's no more development.
Well, it kind of dragged out a certain section of the movie.
It hits a certain point, and then it never grows or changes from there.
Right.
It just kind of keeps repeating one beat until the end.
And then I feel like the end just kind of goes boop, boop, and wraps it up really quickly. You know, boop, boop.
The old wrap-up sound.
Boop, boop.
But it was a good movie and made for an audience that is very underserved.
I hadn't seen Minnie Driver in a while.
No, listen, who has? Well, I have because I saw Stage Fright. But a romance that is targeted at adults that has no like clear, obvious demographic. Like, we're making the movie for the MTV crowd
right,
or whoever, you know, the kids, which is probably why it didn't make a ton of money, I don't think.
I didn't really know much about it.
Got good reviews. Well, what, I mean, Beyond the Lights, and you
see
a poster, it's just like her with sunglasses, and none of this means anything to me.
It's too bad, though, because I think there is an audience for this movie.
There is.
I think there are a lot of even young people who, especially young girls, who would like it, but we'll never hear about it.
Well, did Love and Basketball take a while to kind of catch on?
Yes, it did, actually.
So maybe this will kind of... I think some people are kind of drawn into that by the sports angle.
Right.
Maybe the music angle will kind of draw people into this.
Right.
If I had to choose one to watch, I would probably still go with Love and Basketball.
Let's watch it tonight.
that's a really good movie, and mm-hmm. I like Sanaa Lathan, mm-hmm. and I wish she wasn't in this new movie that we saw the trailer for that I was laughing out loud at the whole time, because it's basically Sleeping with the Enemy and The Boy Next Door and 20 other movies, and you just watch her, and she's so great, and you think, aren't you better than this? Mm. It's not her fault, right?
Right.
I want to talk about one movie quickly that you did not see. Okay. There's a reason you didn't see it. And then we'll move on and we'll talk about 54.
Okay.
So Friday night, I'm down here working. I decide to put on a movie called Voices from Beyond, which is a Lucio Fulci movie from, I think, the early 90s, regarded by some as his last good movie, depending on your feelings about Lucio Fulci. You did not see it. You will never see it. That is fine.
And why will I never see
because it? Because you will never talk to me again if I make you watch a Fulci movie.
I can tolerate a lot, audience. But Patrick knows when there are certain things that would like ruin my mind and make me have nightmares. And I would, I would.
It's the same reason we do not watch The Walking Dead together, because there are just things that you don't want to see.
Right. It's the same reason that I started to read your Human Centipede review in print, years ago, and had to, like, I threw it down and was like, what?
Yeah.
What's going on?
And
I'm
you
ruined.
Were upset just I when I told you the premise of Tusk, I believe,
Oh, my gosh. I've never been able to look at a walrus again. It's over for me. Oh, my gosh.
So I only bring this movie up because it's crazy, right? And there's two quick stories. I just have to tell this story, and I'm sorry it's going to bore you, but I have to share what is fascinating about this movie and this filmmaker. So he's a crazy person. The first 5 minutes of the movie are a couple having pretty graphic sex.
Okay.
The man gets up because there's a little boy like whining or crying in the bedroom nearby, and he's like, I can't do it with all that racket. So he gets up, he goes in the boy's room.
Parenthood.
And proceeds to stab the boy in the chest a bunch of times.
Oh my God.
In graphic detail, right?
What?
Right.
You don't even like that kind of stuff.
I don't. No. And yet with Fulci, I give him a little bit of leeway because I'm like, well, you don't know any better. You're insane. It turns out to be a dream, which makes it slightly more palatable. You still wish you hadn't seen it, but you're like, well, it didn't really happen, right? And then within 5 minutes, that guy, the guy who just stabbed the kid in the woman's dream, it gets sick, coughs up all of his blood, and dies. This is why I'm saying you can never watch it.
I know.
So this is in the first 5 minutes. I was like, well, this is definitely a Lucio Fulci movie, right? So then the rest of the movie is about the guy's daughter who comes to town, and her name is Rosie. And I was so excited when I found that out, because I was like, now we can tell everyone that our daughter is named after a Fulci film. And not even one of the popular ones. Not even one of the ones that people really, not like Zombie or The Beyond. It's like, what? Voices from Beyond? What is that? Rosie has to solve her dad's murder. The dad is like talking to her from beyond the grave. Rosie, find out who killed me. And I'm fascinated by this choice, because in theory, we're supposed to want her to solve the murder, right? She's our hero. We're supposed to invest in her journey and her desires, right? And yet, she's trying to solve the murder of a guy who was established by stabbing a little boy in the chest a bunch of times. Like, this guy's a monster. He's a prick. Why do we care about getting justice for his murder? This is the insanity of this movie. So at one point, that's one point that I want to make. The other one is we return to the dream sequence later on. The woman is once again dreaming of the man stabbing the child. We see it again. This time, she's able to talk to him. And minor spoilers for Voices from Beyond, because I know a lot of you are rushing out to see it right now. She's calling out to him, no, stop. And I'm paraphrasing the lines, but I'm pretty close. So I'm not... You can't kill him. He's your son. She's yelling out. So it's the reveal that, like, oh, this is this guy's kid, I guess. But I love this idea that, like, no, you can't kill him. He's your son. If he was another kid, maybe it would be fine. Don't kill this one. He's yours. I love that that's how you talk him down from murdering a child. Is No, don't kill him. He's your son. It's a crazy movie.
Why were those movies ever made?
Oh, I don't know.
Why?
I don't know.
How did they get popular?
Because there's crazy people
who produced them.
Italians.
Why?
Joe Manganiello.
Why didn't they make more like pasta movies?
I believe that is a derogatory term.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I don't take offense. I'm Italian.
You're Italian. I know. You want to talk about 54?
Not really.
You want to talk about Voices from Beyond more?
Yes.
So 54.
54. Oh my gosh. Came out in
1998.
Okay, 98. Yes.
Yes. 1 year after Boogie Nights.
Which we love.
And I don't think that's an accident. Mm-hmm. It really seems like somebody saw Boogie Nights, said, I want one of those. Green lights Mark Christopher's script for 54. He makes the movie.
So Ryan Phillippe's character is supposed to be like the Mark Wahlberg.
Please call him Shane.
Oh, Shane yes. is the Dirk Diggler.
Oh, yeah. Big time. So 54 comes out.
Not big enough.
Let's talk about our reactions to 54, and then I want to talk a little bit about what happened kind of behind the scenes.
Okay.
My memory of 54 is you were going to college
Aww.
Away mm-hmm. in Wisconsin.
Yes.
And we were hanging out one last night at the end of the summer mm-hmm. before you went away.
Yes.
I had just had my appendix out. I wasn't really supposed to be out and about, but I had to come over one more time with Doug.
Right.
And hang out with you before you went away Aww. To school. We stayed there way too late because I didn't want to leave because you were leaving.
Aww. We weren't dating yet, were we?
We were not. No. Listen, don't make me tell that story okay. about how I was okay. in love with you and you Aww. Wouldn't give me the time of day.
Oh, but anyway, we're married.
Now we're married. She would give me the time of day, everyone. We were friends. So we stayed way too late. I came home. This is my memory. The Friday newspaper was already at our house.
Okay.
So that's an indication of like how late we were there. It right. was basically already morning. The paper boy had come around and delivered right. the paper. So I remember coming into the house, opening, grabbing the paper, opening it to the weekend section and reading the review for 54. My memory is sitting at the table reading the review for 54 at like 4 or 5 in the morning, being sad that you were gone, knowing that you wanted to see it because I think it spoke to a lot of things that appeal to you.
I was, yeah.
And then I saw the movie like 2 days later by myself and thought it was garbage.
What?
How's that for a punchline?
The review you read, did it say it was garbage as well?
I have no memory. It was Roger Ebert's review. No memory of what he thought. My guess is he didn't like it. Who could? So you saw 54 probably in Wisconsin while you were at school. What did you think of 54? Because we saw it separately of one another.
I can't believe we saw it separately.
Me either.
Did we ever watch it together before?
The other night. We watched it twice in a row. Two times. I don't think we did.
No?
No.
Okay.
I mean, maybe we came across it on cable
Studio
one time.
54 is a mess. I definitely
Just
was.
54.
I was so. Oh, sorry. 54. I always have called it. I wanted to see it so badly because, I mean, I was probably riding the Boogie Nights high too. You know, I loved it so much. So anything.
You're a fan of just kind of the disco.
The disco
not like
movie.
Disco music, but like the right. big hair. And some of them. No, the music.
The
kind of the music.
Movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
The clothes and the hair.
I was interested in that. Whole scene too, like not. I mean, like it's a scene I've never been a part of
right,
ever, and
right.
have no interest in being a part of. But because it was,
sometimes we try to recreate it here at home. We
oh,
just
yeah.
get a bunch of inflatables,
yes,
and some little people.
I wear like
some
a little
olive oil,
silver dress,
some glitter,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and a goat,
right? And it works. It's great.
Yeah,
anyone mm-hmm. can come if they want.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We play a little Donna Summer.
Sure.
I almost said
Donna
Gloria
Summer.
Who's
no,
not a person?
Donna Summer.
I mean, she might be a very
right.
nice person.
There is
I
a
just
Gloria though.
Well, Laura Branigan's Gloria?
No.
Is that what you're thinking?
No.
May she rest
That's
in peace.
That's the 80s.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was interested in the time period and the history about it and just the celebrities that would go and all that stuff. Like, it was just that whole scene was, I don't know.
It was a scene. That's for sure.
Its place in history is probably blown up to be like more important than it really was. I don't know
maybe.
If that's fair or,
right, maybe.
Or more exciting than it was, but I don't know. Maybe it was exciting, right? It was exciting.
To the people that were there.
Right, yeah, right.
And
everybody
maybe it's just
wanted
one of
to go there.
Right, and maybe it's one of those things that like because it burned very brightly for a short amount of time.
Truman Capote hung out there,
and it
right?
was so popular. I mean, everybody at yes. one point visited, and then it closed, and so it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, well,
right.
you should have seen it in its prime. You had to be there.
Like that restaurant in Chicago that just closed.
Exactly like Portillo's. What restaurant are you talking about? Taco Bell Pizza Hut? That thing didn't close.
We
that
go
thing's
there.
Going strong.
I don't remember. Oh, it's a super famous Chicago place that like every famous person ever had gone and eaten there, and the pictures were there and stuff. It just closed like a year ago, maybe.
Charlie Trotter's?
No,
oh.
no, it's like way old school.
Charlie Trotter Seniors. So, were you? Did you like?
So.
Part of me suspects that in 1998, You kind of liked 54.
Oh my gosh. I honestly don't remember.
Okay.
I don't.
I mean, I could see you responding to the things that...
I don't think I liked...
I would think that you would respond to.
I liked some of the costumes and the hair and the makeup. Right. I don't think I liked...
No, I don't think you thought that it was a good movie, but I think you liked enough of the things around it that you kind of liked it.
Right. I honestly don't remember.
I could be wrong.
The other night, though, I loved it. Surprise.
Theatrical cut or director's
cut? Oh my gosh. It's so bad. I feel bad. They're both bad.
They are both bad.
I feel bad that they are both bad.
But in different ways. And I'm fascinated because I did a little bit of reading today, and most of the press that I found was coming from kind of gay or LGBT publications and basically saying, like, the director's cut has been rescued. It's now this gay cult classic, which is fine and great.
Okay.
But I don't think it makes it necessarily a good movie. Like, I don't think... Let's not confuse the two. I'm great with a community embracing this movie, but I also don't want to rewrite history and say, like, oh, this great movie has now been rediscovered, because that's not the case.
No.
I don't think.
No.
I mean, we're gonna be.
Can I? Okay. The script
is very good.
It's so terrible.
By Mark Christopher.
I feel so bad. I'm sorry.
No, it's a garbage script.
It's horrible.
And here.
The voiceover.
Okay, so let's talk about this. When we were watching it, I think I turned to you and I said, hey, it's Boogie Nights for Dummies.
Yeah.
Because it is. I mean, it goes through every single beat where the kid dreams of the fancy life in the city, and then he gets it, and then, oh, be careful what you wish for, and it's the fall from grace. And
he's not super bright, but he's a hard worker.
Right, and then there's drugs, and he changes who he is. It's Showgirls, you know, minus everything that's great about Showgirls. By the way, Showgirls is not great. I'm not really a fan of Showgirls.
Do you know that when we were friends but not dating yet?
Why you got to bring that up again?
Oh, twice in one podcast. You made me a present, and in the present, I won't talk too much about it.
I read it on our Showgirls podcast.
You did?
I did.
My gosh.
All the best quotes from Showgirls.
Yes.
Yeah.
You made me like a little list. And
in like the first 6 months of F This Movie, Doug and I did a show on Showgirls, and I read that list of all the great lines.
Oh my gosh.
I remember fucker, fuck off being one.
Oh. Too much swearing on this podcast.
By the way, is a great line. I apologize.
Yeah, no.
Don't let our children listen to it.
I am not offended.
Don't let little Rosie listen. And also don't let little Fulci, which is what I've renamed our son. So here's the deal with the voiceover. Okay, so Mark Christopher makes this movie. Miramax loves it. Great job. They decide to test screen it at a strip mall in, I believe, Long Island.
Okay.
Gets terrible responses. There are some gay themes and subplots in the movie that people don't like. They don't feel like the lead character, played by Ryan Phillippe, Shane, is sympathetic or likable enough. And one test screening essentially changes the fate of this entire movie. And that's kind of the discussion I want to have, because that's just, art's not a vote, and this is bullshit. I understand. Movies are tricky because it's that mix of art and commerce, right? And you want to make the best possible movie for the biggest possible audience. But at the same time, how are you going to let one theater of strip mall a strip mall audience in Long Island dictate the future of your movie? So Miramax demands a bunch of changes. They cut 40 minutes from the movie and spend some money to do 30 minutes worth of reshoots. This is when they add the voiceover. This is when they add the very tacked on happy ending that you and I were commenting on as we watched it the other night,
because
you can just tell, even if you didn't know all the trouble that this movie had behind the scenes, that whole sequence screams reshoots.
Right.
They take out all of the homosexuality, all of those kind of undertones.
Right.
They bulk up all the Neve Campbell stuff. So there's a section about 2/3 of the way through the movie where Ryan Phillippe goes back home for Christmas or something, is turned away by his dad, goes to a diner, runs into Neve Campbell, who plays this soap opera actress
from All My Children
that he has a crush on.
Julie Black.
And they have a conversation, I believe so, because, I mean, they only say it about 100. Yo, that's Julie Black. Everybody's doing their great Jersey accents in this movie. And so in the theatrical cut, then they kind of have this weird vacation romance. And then they get back to the city in 54, and she shuns him and blah, 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 blah. So they build all that up. So now there's a romance. There's this happy ending. There are changes made to Shane's character in terms of some of the things that he does. And they release their version of the movie, which is not Mark Christopher's movie really at all. No. And it still doesn't do very well. People don't really like it. Critics don't like it. Doesn't make a ton of money. And that's the end of it, right? Right. And then as years go on, you hear stories about like, well, that's not the movie he made. And I was always really curious because in my head, there was a much better 2.5 hour version of this movie that was Boogie Nights that right. told the story of Studio 54 and wasn't so on the nose about every single like disco, cocaine, money, the right. end.
The IRS.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So yeah, they're added into the theatrical cut. And apparently some kind of bootleg VHS tapes start going around. There's interest. I don't know how Miramax eventually granted Mark Christopher the ability to go back and re-release the movie, but he did. Went in and kind of changed the photography, which actually really surprised me. Apparently it was shot to be very dark. And I didn't notice that when we were watching. We literally watched these back to back.
Right.
The theatrical cut is much brighter, he claims.
Oh,
it was shot to be very dark.
I did not really notice that.
I didn't either.
I just noticed the difference in Ryan Phillippe's voice.
Which is confirmed. Okay. We both said the same thing. Like, he sounds much older in this voiceover. So, there was no voiceover in the original Mark Christopher cut. That was added by Miramax after that test screening.
Okay.
And yet, when he goes to do the director's cut, he decides to put voiceover in anyway, only it's new voiceover, recently recorded by a now 40-year-old Ryan Phillippe instead of the 22-year-old Ryan Phillippe that's in this movie.
Okay.
So it's very, very weird because now you have kind of older Nick Nolte-ish Ryan Phillippe narrating boyish, hairless Ryan Phillippe.
He looks so young.
He absolutely does.
Oh my gosh.
And it doesn't work. So was this a movie that was never going to be good?
I guess, yeah. I blame the script for that. I really do. When the voiceover starts in the theatrical cut, I feel like it's talking, it's explaining too much. It's not talking down to you, but it's just, it seems too simple. So right from the start, I'm kind of turned off by the narration, and then the dialogue between the characters is sloppy and, I don't know, simple.
Yeah, everyone.
I mean, I know that the characters are kind of simple guys, but.
But everyone only speaks the subtext. You know what I mean? Right. Like, they just come right out and say everything. Nothing.
Right.
It's all tell, don't show.
Yes.
And some of that, I think, is added in, again, in the theatrical cut, because you and I were noticing that some of the more subtle changes, and I honestly didn't notice, I cannot believe 36 minutes in the director's cut are new. So he took out the 40 minutes that Miramax reshot and put in 36 new minutes. Now, some of it is new footage. What? Some of it is just alternate takes of stuff that was there.
Right. Well, we noticed that some of the film is not finished at all in the new one.
Yeah, well, it looked like they were using kind of maybe some, and it's not like that much.
Like a work print?
Yeah, okay. Not that many shots, but there are right. a couple of scenes that look a little bit
jarring. Yeah. And they look really
rough. And still totally watchable. Right. You know, it's not, there are other work prints of other movies floating around that it's like, well, there's a work print of Hard Target that floats around that's is almost unwatchable because it's in such rough shape. But there's lines of dialogue that are so insanely expository, and to what end? Right. So when we first meet Shane, he's having sex with a girl in the back of a car, and it's short-lived. He climaxes rather quickly, and in the director's cut, we understand that that's what happened, and then they have a conversation. She says, "I don't date guys from Jersey." Not from Jersey, from a certain area in Jersey.
She's from
this one area. He's from another. She doesn't date the rich part.
Oh my gosh, it's on the tip of my tongue. She's from that rich part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's not, and so she, but anyway, in the theatrical cut, there's a looped line where she says, "I can't believe you came already," as though we couldn't figure out what happened.
Right,
right. Oh, another scene where a woman is going to lead him down a hallway. In the director's cut, she just takes his hand and leads him down the hallway. In the director's cut, she says something, or in the theatrical cut, she says something like, come with me.
Well, as though we wouldn't understand that that's what he wanted. She stops at the end, turns around, and there's like a nod, and yeah, she says something. Right. It's so extended to like really make it so clear. We don't get it.
Perhaps my favorite moment, and I don't believe it's in the director's cut, is he has a romance with Celia Ward, and she is kind of the person that shows him the ropes and builds him up and gets him discovered. And
just like Cocktail.
Exactly.
Just like in Cocktail.
It's very similar to Cocktail. But there's a point at which he shows up at a party, like a rich person party, and maybe he has a date or something. I don't know. There's a cut where it just goes to her and she goes, Shane, darling, looks like you finally arrived. And that's the kind of movie this is, where like every character just says the thing that we all can already tell is going on screen.
We're seeing that happen right now.
Yeah, just everyone has their dream, but they only can talk about their dream. So Salma Hayek just can only talk about how she wants to be a singer. And Ryan Phillippe, I don't know what he wants. Like, oh, I want to be in 54. Hey, whoa.
I'm Shane 54.
Oh, all the Jersey accents are wonderful.
I actually don't think Michael Myers' performance is
horrible. It's just Mike Myers.
Michael Myers
is from the Halloween series, which we could talk about.
I know you already have. I don't think Mike Myers is terrible.
Okay. We should talk about that.
End of story.
No, we should absolutely talk about that, because I think that's the only other thing, aside from all the weird behind the scenes drama. Now there's two cuts, and that is so not unique to this movie. There are plenty of movies. Heaven's Gate was almost lost, you know, and then it was restored, and now people think it's a masterpiece. Once Upon a Time in America was a 3-hour film that was cut to, I think, 90 minutes. Was destroyed. Roger Ebert, in his review, literally refers to it as a murdered movie, gives the 90-minute cut, I think, 1 star, gives the 3-hour cut 4 stars, because it's a masterpiece. Blade Runner has all these different versions and voiceover added in. So none of this is necessarily a new phenomenon.
Right.
But aside from that angle in talking about the movie, like, oh, there's these two different versions and it was cut and blah, blah, blah. The only other thing that I think might be noteworthy about it is the casting of Mike Myers as the club owner, Steve Rebell, who is, I think, the only character, the only actor in the film playing a real person, right? Everybody else is kind of some sort of construct, or they changed the
name. I don't know.
I don't think there was a Shane 54. I mean, there were so many Shane 54s. Well, that's the thing.
That's what he says to that
character. It's a very common tale. Yeah. It's a very common tale.
Haven't you read that magazine before?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when we watched like the last hour of That Thing You Do the other night? That was fun.
It's so good.
So it's kind of stunt casting in a way. I mean, at the time, this was really like, he had done Saturday Night Live, he had done Wayne's World, he had done the first Austin Powers, but we really hadn't seen him do a dramatic role. We hadn't seen him do something that wasn't a character that he kind of created.
Right.
And he's not bad.
Yeah, I don't think he's bad.
He's okay. he's okay. Sometimes I think he gets caught up in doing what he thinks is an impression, and I don't know anything about Steve Rebell. They show a couple photographs, and but I haven't seen interview footage. I couldn't tell you if it's a good impression. But sometimes it gets a little bit caught up in doing that impression and fails to make an interesting character.
I could understand that, yeah. And he's wearing a prosthetic nose too, right?
Yeah, yeah, that it's all kind of like, he looks sleepy. He talks in this voice. He's got the wig and the prosthetic nose, and
always a little bit on drugs.
It becomes Steve Carell from Foxcatcher, where it's it's all this stuff that surrounds the performance, but is it a performance?
Yeah, that's a really good comparison.
And yet, he's probably one of the best things in the movie.
Well, and I
whereas
I think
Steve Carell is one of the worst things in Foxcatcher.
Yeah, I felt that even more in the second one, in the director's cut. That I had
in
moments.
54 part 2.
I had moments of thinking, Mike Myers is doing something good there, or I'm sympathetic to his character more in this scene because I think of how it's being played, as opposed to just because the writing says you must feel sad that Ryan Phillippe's dad hates him or something like that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So there were just a couple scenes where, I don't know.
And I can't remember any specifics, but do you think any of that has to do... Did they actually reshape his character in the director's cut?
Not a ton.
Okay.
I mean...
So I'm wondering, because one of the things they do in the theatrical cut is they work so hard to make Shane kind of a good guy, a nice guy.
Right. Right. Like, he's so innocent and he's so...
And he doesn't do a lot of the things wrong that he does in the director's cut. I can't say a lot of the things wrong. I mean, the big change is... We'll come back to that. So I was wondering if... In trying to make Shane seem nicer, better, more likable, do they end up demonizing Steve Rebell a little bit more just so we have that other force for him to play against? Whereas in the director's cut, it might be a little bit more kind of shaded. Everybody's like degree of scumbag. I can't remember if there's a big change or not.
I think that's a good way of putting it. I think that probably is a little bit true about the director's cut, that everybody has like the good thing that they're doing, the bad thing that they're doing.
Right.
Everybody's kind of figuring things out. What about Selma Hayek's husband?
Breckin Meyer.
Yes, Breckin Meyer. He had a very sort of one-note character to play.
In both cuts?
Yeah, in both cuts.
I would argue.
Yes. But, I mean, he's sympathetic. I don't think he ever... Does he ever do anything wrong?
He's mean to Selma Hayek because he's jealous.
Oh, right. Yeah, but...
But in our kind of 2015 reality, we're like, well, yeah, of course he doesn't want her sleeping with other people. I mean, we have to put our minds in kind of that weird...
The 54.
Where it's like, that was accepted.
Right.
So actually, he's being kind of an uptight square for not letting her mess around. But yeah,
he's trying to work so hard and he wants to help her get her studio. He supports her.
Right.
He doesn't at first.
Right.
But he really wants to support her. And isn't he kind of talked into that by, or someone tells him, you got to get in the game. You're not going to make enough.
I think that's
like that.
Shane that says get in the game.
Shane 54.
Shane 54 ends up, I guess, being more of a bad influence.
Yeah.
Because he does sell drugs. And I think that's dealt with a little bit more in the director's cut. I mean,
He sells them in such a clean-cut way, though.
He does, yeah, right. He's
he's
like a nothing character.
Right.
And that, so, you know, one of the things about the director's cut we were noticing was there's a scene early on between Shane and his dad that is not in the theatrical cut. And again, they just speak the subtext, but it's like a really badly directed scene.
Oh, my gosh.
The writing is clumsy. The shots are kind of amateurishly framed. Editing feels like it was maybe done by a first timer.
And quickly. I mean, you really could take that scene and use it to teach bad directing. I hate to say that. It's like a kid did it.
It feels like during that scene, we kind of turn to each other and we're like, oh.
What's going on?
It's just a badly made film. It doesn't matter if the homosexual subplot is in here or not. This was made by a bad filmmaker.
Right.
And that's not fair, because I think as it went on, it did get a little bit better. And to the director's cut, to the credit of the director's cut, it does give the audience a little bit more credit for being able to keep up with certain things.
Sure.
It does restore some of the gray area in terms of the character's behavior and their morality. In the theatrical cut, at the end of the film, Shane returns a bunch of money to Mike Myers and says, hey, sorry, I took this. And Mike Myers is like, oh, you're a good friend, because I know it was Greg Breckin Meyer, right? And so Shane's a good guy. Not only is he returning the money, but he's standing up for his friend. He's trying to cover for his friend. In the director's cut, he returns money that he himself stole.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie is willing to make him a thief. Mm-hmm. You know, he still returns the money at the end. Also, I believe I read that in the theatrical cut, he's wearing a shirt in that scene. In the director's cut, he is not.
Hmm.
And again, I don't know if that's just part of the director's cut being a gayer film overall, because that seems to be the biggest change, is that it is suggested in the director's cut that Shane is bisexual, or is at least willing to sleep with both men and women to advance whatever it is that he wants. He has a relationship that's kind of ongoing with a man. He has several trysts with men. There's one montage where
he's with a man, then he's with a woman.
Yeah. And again, in the theatrical cut, it's just women, right? So we're like, ooh, Shane crushes ass.
Yeah, right.
And he still does in the director's cut. It just happens to be man ass and woman ass.
So, you know, while I'm watching the movie, I don't think anything of that. Like, I don't care what gender he's with or what their sexualities are. It, like, that's not even right. And I know that part of that is because it's 2015 and we've come along.
Part of that is just you're a progressive human being.
Yes,
and part of that is that you understand that that was part of the culture at the time.
Yes, thank you.
Sexuality was certainly much more fluid there.
Right. So is it just that Miramax freaked out?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And said, no.
They let a strip mall be like, we don't like that gay stuff. Okay, get rid of the gay stuff.
But,
does it make it a better movie? No, I don't think so. Again, maybe it informs the character of Shane a little bit. If, in fact, Christopher is not suggesting that he is naturally bisexual, right? And maybe that's not fair to make the distinction. I think there are people that feel that way naturally, that are attracted to both men and women. My impression watching the movie, and maybe this is not fair, is that that is not Shane, that Shane is sleeping with men and women as a way to advance
whatever
it
is
that suits him.
Yes. Right. Fame, money,
in terms
popularity.
Of like his own romantic desires and his sexual desires, the language of the film seems to suggest he's attracted to women.
Right.
I don't think that I'm speaking out of turn, but again, Mark Christopher may totally disagree with me and say, no, I wrote that character as bisexual.
Right.
So 2/3 of the way through the film, he and Breckenmeyer share a kiss, which
in the director's cut.
In the director's cut, which I found out was Breckenmeyer's first on-screen kiss.
Oh.
So that gets cut. And so then when they're fighting in the theatrical version, it's because like, Ryan Philby won't help Breckenmeyer bus a table. That's seriously.
What? Yeah. Really?
He's like, hey, help me clean this off.
Miss that?
Yeah. He's like, hey, help me clean this up and we'll get out of here. And Ryan Philby's like, no, man. Steve Rubell doesn't like, we're not supposed to be seen doing that. I'm adding all the bad New York, but not that much. So he says, like, no, Steve doesn't like customers to see us doing that. And Breckenmeyer's like, what? Oh, you're so full of yourself. And he's like, what? Screw you, man. And they fight. And it seems to have nothing to do with the fact, at that point, I can't remember if Ryan Philippi had slept with Breckenmeyer's wife or not.
Well, there's this, in the director's cut, there's a scene where Ryan Philippi and Selma Hayek kiss and Breckenmeyer walks in, like when they're in the backstage or closet or something like that. Am I imagining? Or am I
well, there's
remembering
the, they're in the kitchen one time where they.
No,
all,
not the kitchen.
Okay, in the bathroom.
No,
because that's where they're having
post
sex.
Bathroom. Right. Post bathroom. They're like in a coat room or backstage or something. The.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And that was totally different in the theatrical cut. Like in. At this point, I feel like
people's ears have glazed over. They're just like, I don't know. What's the difference? But again, we're just trying to point out the differences and trying to figure out, like, what does this say about what people are comfortable with or what was wrong with the movie to begin with.
What Miramax saw as most important, you know?
Okay, so let's go there, right? Because Miramax, especially in the 90s, was very, very famous for doing this.
For getting their way?
Well, yes, when it comes to the Oscars especially, but they would find talent, hire that talent, get a filmmaker to make a film, and then recut the whole thing, you know, take it out from under that filmmaker and recut it and reshape it. And, you know, the stories of Harvey Scissorhands, right? That was his hilarious and clever nickname. All the Pretty Horses is a very famous story of Billy Bob Thornton having a 3-hour film, Miramax getting it, cutting at least an hour out of it, releasing it. Nobody goes to see it.
Yikes.
They're still up to this shit, by the way, because they just did it with Wong Kar-wai's The Grandmaster. They almost did it with Snowpiercer. We became very close to getting a very different version of Snowpiercer, one with voiceover, by the way.
Yikes.
So they're still up to that. They're still like, well, we got to spoon feed audiences. Now, listen, maybe they know what they're doing. Maybe they know how to make hits, right? Because they've had a bunch of them. So maybe they're all about. The thing is, I'm talking in circles. They try to have it both ways. They try to be the independent filmmaker friendly studio, especially mm-hmm. in the 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, yes.
While still being very populist, and we make hits, right? I don't know that you can be both, because I think one compromises with the other. I'm not saying you can't realize your independent vision and still have a populist hit. Sure you can. But when that's not what you set out to make, I don't think it's fair for producers to then try to turn your thing into that. I don't think Mark Christopher set out to make happy naked disco party movie. I think he still made a cliche, like, sad naked disco party movie,
sure,
where it's all about excess and drugs and has nothing new to say about any of these topics. Again, Boogie Nights does all of this.
I can't believe that in 54 they even use New Year's Eve as, like,
the moment where everything.
Point. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Right. And Boogie Nights, again, is smart enough to do that halfway through the film and then spend half of its running time showing kind of the fallout, the aftermath. And 54 does not. In 54, there's about 10 minutes left when New Year's Eve happens and the party ends. And that's another one of those examples of Miramax really wanting to make everything obvious, right? In the director's cut, Mike Myers makes mention of the IRS. He goes on TV and says, like, yeah, they don't scare me. And then we get through the rest of the movie, and at the very end of the movie, again, spoilers, the IRS raids the club, and they're taking all the files, and that's kind of what ultimately brings down Steve Rebell. In the director's cut, the IRS shows up throughout the film. It's a thread. We keep
theatrical cut.
We keep cutting back to these two agents and building their case against Steve Rebell, and they see him on TV say, they don't scare me, and they're right. Like, ooh, I have a challenge accepted. We're going to get you, Rebell. And again, it's this idea that, like, there's this fear that if they don't keep reminding us that the IRS is out there somewhere ready to come out for this guy, that at the end, we're not going to understand what happened. I'm pretty sure we can all understand what happened. Yeah. I don't think we're that much more sophisticated in 2015 versus 1998.
No. Nothing is complicated about the story or the plot.
No, it's really not. And so we really could have understood even
and if someone didn't understand it, then they would just enjoy the little disco movie. You know what I mean? Like,
or not like the movie.
Right.
And
that's okay too. Right?
Exactly. Like, we can't be afraid to make a movie that someone won't like. I'm not advocating making a movie you know no one will like,
right,
because then you're Vincent Gallo. But you can make a movie that some people might not like, and that's okay.
So you can't please everyone.
Some people...
We've come full circle.
It's possible. Listen, there are people who don't like Jaws. Jaws, to me, is an example of, like, you can make a movie that pleases everyone and still be a great artistic...
Right.
Film, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because in my mind, who doesn't like Jaws, right? There are people who don't like Jaws. I remember seeing a tweet from a director who I'm a fan of a while back, like kind of not digging on Jaws's pacing, like, ooh, it's laggy, or I forget what the word was.
Ugh.
That's crazy to me. But
right.
Again, nothing is for everyone, right? Not even Jaws, apparently. Mm. So I just wish that Miramax hadn't been so afraid, had not let one audience dictate the fate of a film. And I'm very happy to see the director's cut being made available.
Yeah.
I think there are people who will like the movie more. And if it's true that it has been really now embraced by the LGBT community, great. You know, like...
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't want that? The movie's finding an audience. Mark Christopher maybe feels a little bit vindicated,
right,
because I had commented to you when we were watching it. The movie ends, the theatrical cut ends, and the first credit we get is written and directed by Mark Christopher. And
right,
I said, boy, how heartbreaking that must have been to go to the premiere, watch a movie that, you know,
is not your movie.
Is not yours. I mean,
right,
40 minutes have been reshot, that awful, awful happy ending.
Oh my gosh.
Where everyone reunites for one night only. They give control of the club
and
back to the
and they
recently
spell it
released
out for
from
you.
Prison.
That's, I think you just had the exact dialogue, like, for one night only.
Yeah.
They let him have
it was
the
ours
club.
Again, and
we
get slow
they let
motion,
him do it his way.
And they do the, yeah, yeah. 100% they let him do it his way. And they're singing like the disco, if you could read my mind.
If you could read there my it is. Mind, love.
Which we were then trying to figure out, like, why does that song make us sad? And then we remembered it's from Wonderland, which is another movie that is way more 54 than Boogie Nights. It is not good, but there are good things about it. It was very popular, I guess, for a couple years there to make movies about the 70s, that when the party ended, you know. I don't know. So I'm glad that the movie's out there. I'm glad that he's kind of maybe vindicated. And again, it's always great. I had high hopes, honestly, because for years I was very curious to see the director's cut of 54, and I 100% assumed we never would, because who cares about this movie? Right. And why would a director's cut ever be made available for
where
a movie that was not a success?
Where were the bootleg VHSs coming from?
I have no... apparently he doesn't
even
know. Yeah, he's like, oh, I have no idea.
Where those came from.
Somebody leaked them from somewhere, right? But it just, it makes me think of all the movies that I wish we would see the real version of that movie, you know?
Right.
Like, we hear stories about, oh, it got changed, it got taken away, it got recut. And
can you think of one specifically? Putting you on the spot.
You 100% are. One that jumps to mind can't ever happen. And it's just from a couple years ago, called Knights of Badassdom. And it was a Joe Lynch movie, who's on my shirt right now.
Oh, let me see. Let me see your shirt.
There he is.
Let me see.
There's Joe Lynch.
Show me your badge. So, show it again.
So he made a movie called Knights of Badassdom that was completely recut and gutted, and it's garbage and it's unfortunate. But his version of the movie doesn't really exist, because he never really got much of an assembly. There were unfinished effects shots. Like, he didn't get to finish the movie. This was a finished movie,
right,
that then they went in and said, no, take this out. Let's go reshoot
40
minutes. And everybody has haircuts at the end.
And
they look totally modern, because Ryan Phillippe,
yes,
is in like his Cruel Intentions haircut.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Ryan Phillippe as an actor? We're going to wrap up here, but how do you feel about Ryan Phillippe as an actor?
I thought you were going to ask me about Cruel Intentions, which I love Cruel Intentions.
I'd be happy to talk about Cruel Intentions.
Yeah.
That's one of those movies where I went in with zero expectations.
Right.
I was actively irritated.
Should
to be going
that be our next podcast?
To see that movie. Alex Lawson has asked about doing that.
He
one,
has.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to step on your toes.
No,
Alex
listen.
Lawson.
We drove in a horrible snowstorm to go see that movie, and I was irritated by it. I thought it looked awful from the trailers. I remember Ryan Phillippe being like, she will be my greatest victory. And I was like, I hate this movie. And then I saw it, and I was like, wait a second. That movie is a lot of fun. I like that movie. Mostly because of Selma Blair.
Oh.
And driving in a snowstorm with you.
Oh. And some of the songs.
No, definitely some of the songs. Come on.
I think
now.
You put one on tape
of
for me.
Of course I did. Tapes, by the way, everyone. That's how long we've been together. So what are your feelings about Ryan Phillippe, the actor?
I don't know. I've never seen him in anything where I've thought, oh, wow, he gave an excellent...
He's got the goods.
Wow, what a fantastic performance. He's so good. Or he really sold me on a character or something. I don't hate him, because I don't know. I don't really feel anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
I like him in Cruel Intentions in like a certain scene.
Yeah,
two.
he's one of these guys like Brad Pitt for me, where I don't like him when he's playing a pretty boy, and he's very much playing a pretty boy in this movie.
Yeah.
He's the pretty boy.
Mm-hmm.
But when he is kind of a little roughed up, he can be kind of kick ass.
Yeah, what I can't
he's
think.
Good
what
in
else?
Stop Loss.
Oh, okay.
Way of the Gun is the one that stands out to me that
he's
really, really great in, and that's such a great underrated movie.
What has he been in recently?
He was on that TV show. He's in a lot of like bad direct-to-video stuff. I just watched a movie.
What happened to his career?
Directed
Reese Witherspoon
a couple months ago. And yeah, definitely. She gets all the Oscars and he's on a TV show.
It might be a good TV show.
It might be. I haven't
What's
watched it,
called? It.
Who knows? It's on ABC. It's not Scandal. It's not Revenge.
Shameless?
It's one of those. No,
I
Shameless
I have no
is
idea. Is
Showtime,
that...
I think.
Oh, I have no idea. Yeah.
It's on ABC and it's like there's a scandal and somebody wants
scandal.
Revenge. It's either, I think it's called Scandal Revenge. Anyway, you want to stop talking about 54?
Sure. Yeah, I guess. I didn't get to talk about Ryan Lavery, but I don't
know.
Oh,
my gosh.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there
can
were.
Can you be more specific here?
Ryan Lavery is a character on All My Children.
Played by, I'm going to say Cameron Matheson.
Oh, my God. You're the best.
Yeah, I am.
This is why we're married. I love you. Yeah. And
He's in the movie.
He's in the movie.
He's like an extra.
It's fun. It's fun.
He has lines.
Yeah, he has lines, a couple lines.
He's like one of the bartenders or something.
Yeah. Oh, he looks the part. Like he looks the part that they seem to be going with because they all have like the same physique and look.
I will say this for, I don't know if I can credit Miramax for this. When you watch one of their movies from this period, let's say like 97 to 2001, a lot of people show up. So I don't know if they have an eye for talent or if everybody was kind of on the verge of blowing up. Because even the cast of this movie, when they were cast, had not blown up yet. And between them being cast and the movie coming out, actually, they all got bigger careers.
Right.
Which was, I think, one of the reasons why they had to go back and take all the gay stuff out. Because it's like, well, now people love Ryan Phillippe from I Know What You Did Last Summer. We can't see him kiss another man. Thank goodness.
I'm glad that things have changed.
They really
since
have.
Then.
They really, thank God.
Yeah.
But you watch this movie, Mark Ruffalo plays one of his friends.
Mm-hmm.
Dominic, I'm going to say, I don't know how to say his name. Dominic.
Oh my gosh.
Lombardizzi.
Oh,
he's
I
Herc
should know
from
this.
The Wire.
Yes. That was so fun realizing
with
it was
hair.
Herc. Oh my gosh.
Mary McCormick shows up for like three lines outside of the club. She wants to get in. So there are some
there was another girl in the audience who I recognized from just being a bit player on things. I don't know, you know. Probably like on a bunch of Law and Order episodes or something.
There are some famous faces that at one point they won't let the friends in the club. Ryan Phillippe's like, let my friends in to Steve Rubell. And he says, okay, fine, I'll let your friends in. And then in the theatrical cut, we get voiceover that explains, of course, as soon as my back was turned, he took my friend's name off the list. And we lose that in the director's cut because, again, we understand what happened.
Right.
But Mark Ruffalo is victim of the Jersey accent. Along, hey, you mook. They're all like, get the car, Zook. They're basically just doing grease. Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. Thank you, Bew, for talking 54 with
Thanks
me.
Thanks for having me.
Do you have a favorite disco song?
Oh my gosh, that's pressure.
All right, think about it. I'm going to do this part.
Okay.
Visit our website at fthismovie.net. Follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. Like our page on Facebook. Listen to us in Stitcher, follow us on Instagram, we're on all that stuff. And as always, you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com if you have show requests. We sometimes do our very best to honor them. We can't get to everything, but if you've got a good idea and I think, hey, there's a show there, I will do my very best to make it happen.
Have we done Saturday Night Fever?
No, we have not. No, we have not.
By we, I just mean the podcast.
Well, right. No, I know. Okay. I know. But we have done 54. So great news.
Good.
We did the terrible disco movie. Let's hold off on doing the good one. Anyway, thank you guys very much. Did you come up with a favorite disco song?
We'll save it for the next podcast.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Can I say bye to everybody?
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.